Welcome to Parents Perspective. One winter day, I heard what sounded like thunder above my head. After a few minutes of this noise, I went upstairs and realized that my 12-year-old was running sprints on my treadmill. "Why are you using my machine this way?" I asked. "Mom," he answered with some disdain, "you can't get physically fit at the speed you use." How can we help our children build up their physical fitness and still maintain their own styles of activity? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Today's guests have the perspectives of both parents and professionals. Dr. Carol Brimberg-Schulman is a pediatrician who stresses fitness and physical activity for her patients. She's also the mother of two grown daughters. Welcome, Dr. Schulman.
Hello.
Gary Anderson is the owner and head coach and program director of Marva Totson Teens Gymnastics Club with 1,600 students. He has three grown children, two daughters, and a son. We're glad to have you with us, Gary.
It's nice to be here.
Gary, what should a parent's goals be in any physical activity for children?
Oh, I think the most important thing is that the children are having fun. We certainly don't want the children to be participating in an activity that they're being forced to do or that they're feeling peer pressure to do. It's got to be fun for the kids. I think the important key in physical fitness in children and then carrying that over into later life is that they have good positive experiences as a child.
How do you know they're having fun?
Well, when they come out of their, say, gymnastics class, in my particular situation, if they're telling their mom they want to come again tomorrow, or if they cry when they're being put in the car that they want to go back in and take another lesson, that's a pretty good indication that they're having fun and enjoying what they're doing.
Sounds great.
At the other end of the spectrum, Gary, how can we take performance stress off of children?
Oh, this is a real problem. I think so many of our parents today live vicariously through the children, that they try to accomplish through their children something that they felt they could have done or should have done when they were a child, and therefore put undue pressure as to the performance level of the children. We'd like to emphasize in our program, our gymnastics program, the building of self-confidence and self-esteem and the fact that they participated. Not necessarily what they've accomplished at, say, an Olympic level or at a competitive level in a state championship meet, but the fact that they participated. And I think the parents make a big mistake when they reward performance rather than rewarding participation.
And so many activities for children do exactly what you described as well, and you want.
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of parents say after their child scores the winning goal in soccer, they go out for a celebration dinner. Specifically with me, when the child comes in third on balance beam in the state championship, they go out for a celebration dinner. And I'd like to see that celebration dinner or that little celebration taking place because they were good enough to just be on the team, or they were good enough to attend practices for the entire duration of the season. Maybe we should have that celebration dinner not because they made the playoffs or because they made the winning goal, but because they attended every practice and they did the best they could at every practice.
When my son started soccer, my oldest son, he had a coach who liked to give them big trophies. And every kid on the team in first grade got a huge trophy, which my son still has. He has never received such a large trophy for anything since, but that was a participation trophy, and they felt really important. Dr. Schulman, what ways can we help our children incorporate physical fitness activities into their daily schedules?
I think it's got to be made part of their lives. No child is going to respond if you say, "I want you to do 10 push-ups this morning, I want you to do 50 sit-ups, and then go run 2 miles." They're not going to do that. So it's got to be part of your life. I think if it's part of the family life, that makes it much better. If parents can take a walk with their children after dinner, if they can all engage in some physical activity that they enjoy, like swimming or boating or climbing or hiking, it should be part of their lives. Daily lives, you know, you don't want to necessarily drive everywhere. If you can walk to the corner and get an ice cream cone, that's a little better than driving there. Just activities that emphasize getting up and moving around, and not just all sitting together. You should be moving together. But again, as a family, it helps to do it as part of family life.
So you can't just say to your children, "You go get physically
Absolutely.
Fit.
You've got to be doing it. Otherwise, they're not going to do it.
Each of you has alluded to the importance of the parents knowing what's going on where they're taking the children. And I think that we want to just reiterate that. It's not a case of dropping your child off for his physical fitness lessons. It's a matter of knowing where you're taking the child and possibly staying and watching, getting involved.
Yeah, Linda, it's really disheartening. In my particular business, we have situations where six-year-olds or seven-year-olds are dropped off at the front door, and then when the lesson's over, they pull up in the car and honk the horn. And the 7 or 8 year old's supposed to come out to the parking lot, and be ready
and
to go.
And the parents never see what goes on then.
Exactly.
I would think that the kids also don't feel as supported in what they're doing if the parent doesn't see. It's a self-confidence thing.
And you can see that in the children in their lessons, too. The ones that are looking to mommy for approval and big smile on their face when they've accomplished something, maybe a forward roll or a cartwheel. And then there's the others that they've accomplished something that's really terrific for them. They've done their first cartwheel or they've done their first backward roll, and yet there's no one there to help them share in that success other than a teacher.
Is that something doctors talk to parents about?
Yes. I think that actually in anything your child does, parental involvement really is important, and that includes physical fitness activities as well.
It takes a lot more energy to be a parent
than
we thought initially.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I have some friends who the parents are more physically active than the kids.
Right.
And the parents independently years ago got interested in kayaking. And so they have taken the kids kayaking. Now the kids sort of enjoy it, but it took a long time.
That's the best way to do it. If you can just kind of get them into something that you all are doing as a family that's fun, that's not presented. This is exercise. We're now going to make you fit. It's like, let's go have fun. Let's take a hike.
There's also some simple everyday things that you can incorporate in your life. You had asked me the question about stress, and I know in the local shopping mall, there's always the stress of finding that parking space that is closest to the store or closest to the bank that you want to go to. And certainly when a parent engages in a parking battle with another adult and the child's in the car, they're sending a real strong message that, gee, maybe they don't want to, number one, get along with their friend and be polite. But if the parent wants to park as close to the bank as possible, then that sends a message to the kid that, gee, we don't want to park maybe at the other end of the parking lot and walk to the bank. And it's only a few blocks in many cases.
That
gives you a little bit of time with your child to take that walk, mm-hmm. too.
Dr. Shulman, how can we tell if our child is physically fit?
Well, physical fitness actually has a lot of different components. Part of it is body composition. If you look at your child and your child is grossly overweight, that might be a clue that things are not exactly right. You want to look at how your child is behaving. What's his activity level? Is he going out and playing with the other children and basically keeping up? Or does he come in after school and sit down and watch television and do basically sedentary activities? You want to see if he has endurance. If you're walking with your child in the mall or wherever, and after 5 minutes he says, oh, come on, Mom, I want to sit down, that might be a clue that things are not right. If he's avoiding stairs because, oh, I don't want to climb up all those stairs, let's take an elevator. Again, that might be a sign that things are not quite right. If you have a child whose body composition looks about right, who's active, who's maybe participating in sports or activities, who's enjoying it, that's a pretty good sign that things are probably okay.
Gary, what kinds of activities should we encourage our children to participate in? You work with all different age groups, so I'm sure you see them before they're old enough for teams and from then on.
Yeah, we sure do. Well, specifically, and I think I was asked on the panel because of my gymnastics background and expertise, I'm really sold on the sport of gymnastics because I think programs are offered to allow children to accomplish things at their particular level. Not everyone that comes into gymnastics is going to be an Olympian. We know that. But certainly every child can progress from walking on a balance beam that's sitting on the floor to a balance beam that's 6 inches off of the floor to maybe within a year a balance beam that's a foot or 3 foot, you know, off the floor. I think, as I mentioned earlier, the building of the self-confidence and the self-esteem. Once a child has success, and not necessarily dictated by winning a medal or not dictated by making a team, but once the child accomplishes that success of being able to walk on a balance beam without falling off, then they feel good about themselves and they have pride in what they're doing, and it's going to inspire them to want to do it again, maybe on a higher beam or maybe walk backwards on the beam or sideways instead of just forward. So the selection of the sports, usually the child's physical structure will help dictate what sports they may be interested in or which sports they may have success. Certainly, we've had trouble in gymnastics with children that are 6 foot 7 inches tall trying to do pull-ups or trying to tumble, where if you get a child that's small in stature that would be maybe good in wrestling or good in gymnastics, then they have success. It's an enjoyable experience, and then they want to continue to pursue it.
And what do you do with the taller one? Where do you send them?
Well, maybe basketball
camp.
Even soccer. You know, there's an area there for tall people. Volleyball.
And I guess also the child's personality would also dictate if the child is not a competitive child, if he shies away from things where it's clear that there are certain levels of achievement.
Yeah, I think, Sandy, however, we do find that there are specific types of personalities that are attracted to sports. Certainly an aggressive person may choose boxing, or wrestling as compared to gymnastics, where they're not in head-to-head combat with another individual. But usually there we find those personality distinctions at the higher competitive levels. And I think what we're talking about is getting children active and participating at just a participation level, not a competitive level. And I think the personality in that case is not an overwhelming factor. You could have a child that's not combative yet still enjoy wrestling or still enjoy maybe football. Carol maybe would have some experiences there.
Yeah. A physician actually can help a lot in terms of sometimes directing children toward an activity that might be more appropriate for them. As Gary said, certainly a very tall child may not be as comfortable in gymnastics as in basketball. A child who's very small and slight may not be very happy on the high school football team. And often a physician can help to direct a parent toward sports that might be more appropriate for that child's physical type, for that child's personality, and also in terms of safety. There are certain medical conditions that might say, well, okay, this kind of sport really isn't very good. For example, if a child is missing one of a paired organ, for example, if a child is blind in one eye, you really have to protect the other eye, and that's probably not a child that should be directed toward racquetball or toward some sport that might be dangerous. So that physicians can often help in terms of directing children toward sports that are safe for them, but also ones that they might enjoy more based on, again, body type, personality, and a whole lot of other factors. Because, again, the goal, as Gary said, is that the child's got to enjoy it, the child's got to have fun, and you really want this to be a lifelong kind of commitment, that children really want to be physically active, that they're not just going to do something because they're on the high school football team, but then the rest of their lives they're going to sit and watch television. You really want to encourage activities that are going to be able to be continued throughout life.
Now, at the other end of that spectrum, what about a non-physically active child? One of our boys felt that physical activity was if you walked from the car to the door. That was it. That was exercise.
Well, I think a child like that, you can work on that. I mean, that sort of is exercise, but what you want to get them to do is to do it for a little bit longer in a somewhat more sustained method. So again, a child like that, I don't think you're going to be able to direct him to go do calisthenics or do wrestling or do soccer if he's not interested in it. But you may be able to get him to go on hikes with the family. You may find that there's some individual sport or activity that he might enjoy just because of getting his own skill. Some children, for example, that seem to have no interest in any physical activity might be interested in something like karate because they feel that this is macho or whatever they feel, but it's actually an excellent physical fitness activity. A child might be interested in dance, which, again, you don't always think of as a sport, but it really is and really promotes tremendous physical fitness. So that if you approach it in a different way and you don't say, well, you know, get off your rear end and do soccer, and you kind of look for more creative ways to incorporate physical activity, I think you can do it even for the child that's determined not to be an athlete and not to be active.
For parents, can you just go over what being physically active can do for a child?
I think that more and more medical studies have shown that physical activity is absolutely important for optimum growth, development, longevity, feeling good. I mean, it does wonderful things for you, and I think that it helps to maintain a healthy body weight. It helps to maintain optimal cardiovascular functioning. It probably, I think, contributes to mental alertness. I mean, I think the benefits of physical activity really can't be overstated. I think that it's very, very important. And important for children, particularly because I think then it leads to lifelong habits of physical fitness. I think that if a child has made exercise or activity a part of their life, that this is much more likely to continue on into adult life, particularly sports that can be lifelong activities like walking or running or cycling or, you know, things that can be continued throughout life. And that's why I think it's so important to emphasize it for children.
Carol, what I've seen, certainly gymnastics is not a lifelong activity. There's not a whole lot of people that do it, gymnastics, at age 50 or age 60. But what I have seen, being in business for over 30 years now, that clients have come back to me with their children, and they've put their children in our gymnastics program because they said, you know, when I did gymnastics, it made me more coordinated, it made me more physically fit, and I got a lot of self-confidence, and it's made me a better tennis player, or it's given me more confidence to be a better golfer. The flexibility and the strength that I've developed through gymnastics, and certainly not just gymnastics, but other sports that you can't do later in life, like probably wrestling, competitive wrestling, or even competitive football, but the carryover values of all sports at a young age certainly can enhance your performance in lifelong sports like golf and tennis.
I think that's a really important point. We're laying groundwork for a lifetime of fitness. This is a question really for both of you about cautions. What kinds of cautions do parents need to be aware of with sports? For example, weightlifting, contact sports, fencing?
Well, certainly, Linda, parents have to realize that in any type of sports or in any type of physical activity, there are inherent risks. I mean, even going for a jog alongside of the road, there's an inherent risk that you could fall in a ditch or turn an ankle or even be hit by a car if you're not off the side of the road enough. So first of all, the parents have to understand that. That when their child is participating in any type of sports or activities, there are certain inherent risks. I think the parent's job is to make sure that those risks are reduced as much as possible by getting them into a program that is well supervised, that is using safe equipment, that is providing safe activities. I think Carol had mentioned earlier about football programs that are weight related to the children, age and weight. So you're playing football against children that are the same age and the same basic weight and not putting a 100-pounder up against a 200-pounder. So that certainly becomes the parent's responsibility to make sure that the programs are being run by competent people and that the safety measures for that particular sport are being followed. There's some type of standard that they are following in conducting that activity that their child is participating in.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think that proper supervision is critical, especially in sports where there are potential problems, weightlifting. You really want to have somebody supervising the kids that knows exactly what they're doing and what the limits can be. And also you need to make sure that your children have the proper equipment for whatever sport they're doing, that if your child is cycling, he's got to be wearing a helmet. If he's horseback riding, he's got to be wearing a helmet. There are certain types of equipment that are crucial in terms of safety, and you or the coach or whoever is helping with the activity has to make sure that this equipment is appropriate. Otherwise, your child's not going to be safe.
The other thing is that I was always told there are certain sports that kids shouldn't do before they're a certain age because of physical development. I heard this with weightlifting.
I think this is true, Sandy, that there aren't a whole lot of research studies out there on children and weightlifting. I know for our competitive team, now out of our 1,600 students, there are 100 that are training on a very intense level, 5-6 days a week and 4 or 5 hours a day, and their goal is to make the Olympic team. So certainly with that very small 1% of the population that's doing gymnastics, our concern is to make them as strong and as flexible as possible. But our problem is that there are no research studies out there available on young female adults age 9, 10, 11, and the results either the positive or negative results from them weightlifting. So what we revert to is body resistance types of activities where we have them do push-ups and pull-ups and handstand push-ups and leg lifts where they hang on the bar and lift their legs to the bar, where they're using their own body weight as the resistance and they're not using some other form of weights, you know, as a resistance. And if I can divert just a little bit, because Carol touched on this a little about getting the proper equipment. This can be very costly and it can be very expensive. And when she said that, the first thing I thought of was the Kenyans who could perennially win the marathon. And it takes very little or no apparatus. It doesn't take a special $2,000 balance beam. It doesn't take a special $70 football helmet. And yet, these people have taken physical fitness probably to the ultimate by winning every single marathon that's ever run and the Olympics, and they just go and run.
Without proper running shoes or anything.
Probably not.
No shoes.
I'm sure they don't have the $230 Air Nike or Air Jordans, you know.
That's true. But how can parents find out about what's the proper age for something? In other words, if a kid wants to do XYZ sport and you wonder, gee, is there a certain age when they should do it? Is there a certain age that's not a good idea?
I had one who wanted to do fencing and no one else we knew had ever done fencing. So I wasn't sure if he was the right age, if I was putting him in with a bunch of people I knew nothing about. How do you decide all those things?
This is an interesting question, and I would challenge any parent out there to use the same criteria that they do when they're trying to select a car. I don't know of any parent out there that goes to the first parking lot and says, I want that car, and without test driving it, drives it away and pays the money. When you're selecting a car, you go to four or five different car dealers. You try to negotiate the best deal. You drive different models, different makes, and you find out which one is best suited for you, which car meets your price range, and which one performs at the level you want it to perform. In sports, we can do the same thing. You call a college coach, you call a college fencing coach, you call various programs, maybe try them out for a week or two on a trial basis. If the child's having fun and you feel safe and that he's learning a lot, then you continue in that program. If not, you pursue another one.
We were lucky we found a county recreation department program. That was a great place to begin because there were lots of beginners, and it turned out there were lots of young beginners, which I was very surprised to find. He continued until college, freshman year.
Gary, what should parents know about special equipment? We touched on that a little bit. There's a lot that they probably should keep in mind.
Again, specifically in gymnastics, there's no real special hand grips or there's no real special balance beam shoes that they absolutely have to have. When we're looking at a participation level for fun, for self-confidence, for self-esteem, there's really not, in my sport, in gymnastics, a whole lot of special equipment that's needed, just a pair of shorts and a T-shirt and a happy, smiley face that's willing to try. Certainly in other sports there are, and Carol may have some insight there.
Again, as a pediatrician, I see the results of injuries when children don't have the proper equipment for sports that really require it. So that you do have to make sure if your child's rollerblading and you don't have the right equipment, I'm going to see a lot of broken wrists from that. So it's a parent's responsibility really just to make sure that the child is safe. And again, that means knowing what the sport is and knowing what the risks are. Is it wise to have a helmet? Is it wise to have wrist guards? Is it wise to have knee guards? And these are things that a parent really is responsible for knowing. Otherwise, we'll see a lot of unnecessary injuries, and I do.
Rollerblades. You see lots of rollerblades.
Lots.
And how can they buy them rollerblades and not helmets and knee pads and elbow things and everything else?
Exactly.
It was a fortune to outfit a kid to go roller skating in today's world, but you feel they're safer. What should parents know about possible sports injuries? When should a child see a doctor, for example, or what kinds of basic first aid should parents know about?
The basic first aid is really the acronym RICE, R-I-C-E, that if your child injures something, R is for rest, you rest it. I is for ice, you put ice on it. C is for compression. If it's a twisted ankle, you compress it with an ACE wrap or an elastic wrap. And E is for elevation, you put the leg up. If you have any questions, if a child's injury seems severe, if you're concerned, as physicians, we encourage you to call, because often we or one of the nurses, just by hearing the circumstances of the injury and knowing what the child is complaining about right now, we can advise you. Yes, you've really got to come right to the emergency room. Or no, just do RICE and kind of see what happens overnight and call in the morning. So we recommend that you call.
It's always worth the phone call.
Absolutely.
Right?
Special thanks to our guests, Dr. Carol Shulman and Gary Anderson. You've helped us better understand how to encourage our children to be physically fit and ourselves as well, in the bargain. We have a gift for caller number 3 on our listener poll, an autographed copy of Dr. T. Barry Brazelton's new book for children, Going to the Doctor. To answer today's question coming up next, please call us at 1-800-791-8573 and give us your response.
What physical activity do you enjoy most with your child? Call us at 1-800-791-8573. We'd like to send you Dr. Brazelton's book this week and to use some of your comments on the air. So please leave your name and phone number if you would like us to call you back. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share parents' perspective. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.